Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as tired as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me, you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Alrighty, Monday, February 16th, and we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the MC Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer? Under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living, because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast, my friends. We are here to change the world, one chemo infusion at a time, and share all of our collective crapness. Now call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim, because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here, you are still here, and this is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right. You heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that really matters. On last week's show, I spoke with Mae McCarmo, young adult breast cancer survivor and founder of the Tiger Lily Foundation, along with author and co-survivor Marles Johnson from the book Cancer Adventures, Turning Loss into Triumph. And on tonight's show, everything changes with young adult survivor, performer, writer, and creator of Fun with Cancer Patients, Brian Lovell, young adult survivor Hodgkin's lymphoma, and the visual artist of Eisen Art, Seth Eisen, and our one and only co-host Carol Rosenthal is a guest herself tonight to debut and premiere her amazing book, Everything Changes, and opine on all things fabulous in the world of stupid cancer. So hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun-filled and exciting romp to the hand tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and a Stupid Cancer welcome all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network, our new home on the internet since 2009, coming to you live from the Chemo Deck, our brand new studio in downtown Manhattan. I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, a 13-year young adult survivor of brain cancer. Joining me live in the studio, as always, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack McFord. Hey, Jack.
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Hey, yo. Jack will be monitoring our live concurrent chat room. So if you have something to say, well, I might ignore you, he won't, but feel free to ignore him, as most of the women do anyway.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. And as always, with a new studio and a new broadcast format comes a new co-host, hailing from the windy city of Chicago and upgraded from the ranks of chief cancer oncospondent, the lovely and talented and spectacular Carol Rosenthal. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Matthew.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, Jack.
Looking forward to having you on the show and as a guest and co-host. It's going to be really exciting. And so welcome, my friends, to the Stupid Cancer Movement. Because we're here to stay and the couch is comfy. You see, we're not just about the quantity of your life. We're about the quality, too. Why? Because it's more to the cure than just research. For better or for worse, change comes slowly and only from within. The need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Y, whatever that means, is only coming from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, I say that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook and Second Life and Camp Sanjaya, on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, and it's our fight. We have the sheer numbers, the voting power, and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not an excuse for a cure, and survivorship is all that matters. Are you in? The time is now. It's our time. It's about time. And, of course, Donna Martin graduates. And now the news.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Alrighty, during this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to inform them about the latest and greatest in young adult programs, services, events, projects, and other stuff. If you have an upcoming event, project, program, service, or other stuff that you'd like to hear broadcast during this part of the segment, please fax it to me at 718-745-1928. That's 718-745-1928, or email stupidcancer@imtooyoungforthis.org. Take it away, Jack.
Thank you, Matthew, and here is your Stupid Cancer News. The I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation and the Leukemia Lymphoma Society are proud to present the 2009 Oh My God Summit for Young Adults, Monday, May 4th in New York City. The Oh My God Summit provides attendees with valuable resources specific to the needs of young adult patients and survivors. Check out the OMG website at www.omgsummit.org. The pre-registration process opens March 1st, and the conference is limited to 175 attendees, so please register early. Hey, all you fans of Tamika and friends, take a stand against cervical cancer by voting for Tamika Felder, young adult cervical cancer survivor, advocate, and friend of I2Y. Please visit i2y.com/Tamika. That's i2y.com/TAMIKA to be redirected to a Facebook cause page where you can vote your heart out. Be sure to scroll down the page to Lead Out Loud section to cast your vote on our friend Tamika, and I apologize, I can't read my typing. Attention Maryland, the Omen Cancer Fund for Young Adults is proud to present their Screw Cancer Happy Hour series. Screw Cancer Happy Hour dates for Columbia, Maryland are February 18th and March 18th, and the Baltimore, Maryland Happy Hours are February 19th and March 19th. For more information, visit omanfund.org. That's ulmanfund.org. Wednesday, February 25th, from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, Stupid Cancer and Crazy Sexy Cancer Get Serious. I2Y founder Matthew Zachary and your chief cancer anarchist, me, Jack Bouffard, will be joined by Crazy Sexy Cancer author Chris Carr for the Oncology Show on Sirius XM's Doctor Radio. Matthew, Chris, and I will be in studio discussing the young adult cancer movement while raising awareness to our age-specific needs with our hosts, Dr. Abe and Dr. Sylvia. Your calls and comments are welcome, and you can find Sirius XM's Doctor Radio at www.sirius.com/doctorradio. Hello, ladies. The Young Survival and Living Beyond Breast Cancer Coalition's 9th Annual Conference for Young Women Affected by Breast Cancer is being held at the Hilton Anatoly in Dallas, Texas, February 27th through March 1st. Don't be shy about signing up at youngsurvivorsconference.org because I won't be there. St. Louis, Missouri, Achieving Recovery from Cancer to Health Childhood Cancer Survivor Retreat Weekend is being held at the Perry Marquette Lodge in Grafton, Illinois, Friday, March 20th through Sunday, March 22nd. Young adult survivors 18 to 30 years old and who are 2 years removed from treatment may attend this free weekend. For more information and to apply, contact Lisa Matola at area code 314-454-4635 or email Lisa at lmm1321@bjc.org. Up next, we have Camp Make a Dreams, ovarian cancer retreat in fabulous Montana, being held April 30th through May 4th. Refer to campdream.org for more information or call Camp Make a Dream at area code 406 459 5987. Next up, we have 70k.org. That's the word 70, the letter K, .org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Moving on to cancer care programs. The young adult groups that are active and running at cancer care are as follows. Living with cancer, inactive treatment, life after cancer, post-treatment, young adults, loss of a parent, young women with breast cancer, young adult individual grief counseling, and young adult caregiver, all diagnoses and relationships. Contact our friend Julie Larson at jlarson@cancercare.org. That's jlarson@cancercare.org. Or you can reach Julie by phone at 212-712-6173. And finally, we have Live On, sperm banking by mail for cancer patients. Trust me, guys, I'm going to say this every week. Do not do what I did. Mailing sperm without a live-on kit is frowned on by our federal government. For more information on sperm banking by mail, please go to www.liveonkit.com. Live sperm banking by mail is made possible by our good, good friends at Fertile Hope. And I would personally like to send out a big thank you to the law firm of Dewey, Skroom, and Howe for clearing up my embarrassing situation with the United States Postal Service. And that, my friends, is the Stupid Cancer News.
All righty, Jack. Well done.
Thank you.
Hey, Carol, you with us?
I certainly am.
I was going to do Brian's segment, but I figured, you know, you sent me his bio, but you kind of recruited him, so I'd like you to maybe talk a little about how you met Brian and his story before we play his segment.
Sure. You know, I met Brian because I had put a call out to young adult cancer patients nationally that I wanted to interview in my book, and he and I were emailing each other, and I could just tell right away this guy is incredibly witty, super insightful, and I will say ballsy, because he's really into testicular cancer and has a play called Ball that is about his testicular cancer. And it just so happens that he lived down the street from me and worked at a juice bar in my neighborhood, and it was kind of a match made in heaven. So I did interview him for my book, and he is an incredibly talented performer and writer and director. He's now living in London. And he is creating this incredible program called Fun with Cancer Patients. I encourage people to click on all of the Brian Lobel links that you might see for him up on our site for the show tonight, because he's starting this incredible internet project with cancer patients telling their stories, wishes, and desires about cancer.
Wow. That was a lot better than what you sent me to read.
Well, glad you asked.
All right, well, let's welcome to the show Brian Lobel, everybody. All righty, Brian, you with us?
Hi there. So good to be on the Stupid Cancer Show tonight. Tonight I'm going to be talking a little bit about that moment when other people discover your cancer. Here we go. For better or for worse, in my 6 years since surviving cancer, I have gotten used to getting what I want on a pretty consistent basis. Because of this fact, when I was recently denied a bummed cigarette by my new best friend Samantha, I instantaneously felt myself filled with a reaction most childlike and violent. I mean, didn't you have, like, cancer in your lung? I had forgotten that I even told her about how I had cancer. And I certainly didn't tell Samantha I had had cancer in hopes of winning her pity or respect, but rather to explain my work, which is often about cancer and illness. That conversation I have goes something like this. Oh, what do you do? Oh, cancer? Why cancer? Oh, are you better? So I usually just tell people that I'm a consultant. I'd prefer to skip the whole predictable conversation. I've had it thousands of times, often multiple times in a single day. Yes, I was diagnosed at 20 with stage 3 metastatic testicular cancer. Yes, it was terrible. Yes, I'm so lucky to be alive. blah, blah, cancer, blah. Others have not had this conversation multiple times a day, and for most people in their 20s, this conversation is unexpected, jolting, and definitely worthy of pause. But how many times a day must I be expected to get it up and wax eloquent about illness and survival? Every nuance must be understood, each drug name memorized, every similar condition experienced by their second cousins compared and analyzed. So that's the cancer conversation that I have with randoms, that I meet and with whom my cancer comes up immediately. But then there is a second kind of cancer conversation, a slightly more stressful kind. This cancer conversation is with individuals that I've met post-cancer who have never heard about my cancer until one day when it mysteriously sneaks out, like gas stealthily passed in a crowded elevator. Unfortunately, just like the past gas, after hearing about my cancer, people are stopped dead in their tracks and curl up their face in disbelief. A huge gulf is instantaneously created between us. While the gulf is often filled with well-meaning compassion or wholehearted empathy, it is nonetheless spacious between us. The moment my hidden cancerous past is revealed, I immediately try to reject all the unearned respect I will assuredly receive. I'm not better, I'm not as stronger, I'm the same as I was 5 seconds ago. It's just your perspective that has changed. It's just your perspective that has changed. It's just your perspective that has changed. But even this mantra eventually feels stiflingly redundant. And then there's a theoretical cancer conversation. This time with the asshole that I meet at a party with no perspective who I know would shut up about his 6-month internship in Mali, which he deems as his time spent living in poverty, if I just dropped the cancer bomb. It would be so beautiful. Should I? Even if it does get such a man to shut up, he is then going to start that predictable line of questioning about how many cycles of chemotherapy I had. Rocks to my left, hard places to my right. So I usually just feign interest in the man's struggle and remain silent about the hero that I know that I am. Well, you could ask, Brian, if you don't want people to talk to you about your cancer, shouldn't you stop writing about your cancer? Shouldn't you stop performing about your cancer? Good point, I think. And then I do nothing. There's no neat ending, which I guess is what I'm trying to embrace. No gestalt or a moment of tidy closure. Or maybe it's just I'm still not over it. I eventually got a cigarette from Samantha, not because she forgot about the former lesions in my lungs, but because she realized that if I wanted to carpe each post-cancer DM by smoking a cigarette, well, I should be able to do whatever the hell I want. I do kind of like how that works out. Thank you so much for having me on the Everything Changes edition of the Stupid Cancer Show tonight with Carol Rosenthal. If you want to learn more about me or my work, please check out brianlobel.com. And that's it. Back to you, Matthew.
All righty, Brian Lobel. Well said, well done.
That was good.
Real good stuff.
What time is it?
9:18. My second guest tonight is the co-host of the Stupid Cancer Show.
Who's that?
I have no idea. Somebody new.
She cute?
We'll find out over the radio. Carol Rosenthal is a healthcare blogger.
She's cute.
And a young adult cancer advocate. She lectures on healthcare issues at Columbia College and is co-host of this, the Stupid Cancer Show. Her essays, scathing and extraordinary, and expert opinions on young adult cancer have been featured in the New York Times and produced by NPR. Everything Changes, the Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, is the culmination of her 5 years of research with patients and healthcare professionals in the young adult community. I can't believe I've only known her less than a year. She's an extraordinary person. My honor and privilege to have her at my side every Monday night. Please welcome, even though she's already here, to the Stupid Cancer Show, the wonderful, lovely, talented, and wholly original Carol Rosenthal. Do I get a signature? Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Matthew.
All righty.
Nice.
Less than a year? I can't believe it.
If you could, yeah, it's been about just about a year.
About a year.
Yeah, crazy, crazy. And my, what a year it's been. Look where we are.
Yeah, a lot's happened in a year. A lot of good things to come, too.
And I actually did meet you.
Yes. I interviewed the one and only Matthew Zachary in my book. Chapter 12 of my book is the Matthew Zachary chapter, and was pretty amazing to sit down face-to-face with you and a big old tape recorder between us and just talk free form for a while.
It was great, and I'm going to see you again when I'm out in Chicago in June.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Carol, real quick, I'm holding your book in my hand. Where's the Jack Bufar chapter? I don't...
The Jack Bufar. You gotta just flip back to the index. You gotta be in there, right?
Right,
I don't know if it's under the B or yeah.
Okay, I'll keep looking.
Okay.
All right, Carol, what is your stupid cancer story that inspired you to care about stupid cancer?
Well, I was diagnosed when I was 27 years old, papillary thyroid carcinoma, blah, blah, blah. And the reason why I say blah, 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 to not just, you know, ripping that quote off from Brian, but I say blah, blah, blah because, well, my story is important to me. It's not the nitty-gritty details of when we were diagnosed and what kind of treatments we went through that matter the most to me. What matters the most to me is how we've responded to our cancer experiences. So it was 8 years ago that I was diagnosed. 2 years after I was diagnosed, I got myself a really snazzy little tape recorder and started traveling around the country recording conversations with young adult cancer patients, so 20s and 30s, and talking about the kind of stuff that doesn't come up in support groups and that we're not talking to our therapists or our family or our friends about, the super taboo cancer stuff. So that was 5 years ago that I started that project. The book has just hit the shelves, and I am still living with cancer 8 years later. I've got two little tumors nesting on my jugular vein, and I'm sort of in the wait-and-watch mode. They're very slow-growing. So that's, in a nutshell, my cancer story.
Which goes back to this whole idea of living with cancer. And this prospect of it being just part of a lifestyle that you just deal with, like a chronic condition, most people have no idea it's possible to just live with it. Most people still think you just die right away from it. Like, what kind of – I'm going off cue here, and I have to forgive me because I know how meticulous you were and me wanted to ask you these questions. But I'm just going to throw you for a loop here and just ask you specifically, what type of stigma do you think people face when you don't die from cancer but you're not cancer-free?
Well, I think it's a stigma of delusion and lack of knowledge, even though that's a really harsh way of putting it. But I think that there's not a lot of education about what it means to be cancer-free or in remission. When I asked my doctor when I would be in remission, he said to me, you know what, that term is passé. He said, I don't use that terminology anymore because eventually our technology is going to get so good that we're always going to be able to detect some amount of cancer in you. Now, they can detect it in me without the futuristic technology because my tumors are large enough. And I think that we look at the terms remission and cancer-free in these very commercialized ways almost, like, are you done with it yet or not? And even for people who have gotten the hey, clean bill of health, having cancer follows you around long after you're given the A-OK. And so it's just learning how to cope with it on a day-to-day basis. Some days it is hard for me, and it's scary. I have an appointment coming up at Memorial Sloan Kettering in your fair city in 4 weeks. And, yeah, every day I look at the calendar, it's a countdown until that date. Sometimes I don't think about it that much. I just dive into writing about other people's cancer as a distraction from thinking about my own.
I think that's a really great answer.
Well, it's a work in progress, the figuring out how to live with cancer, and I don't think that, you know, I don't think there's any one right way to do it, and I don't think that I necessarily have one way that I do it myself. You know, I just have to keep my eyes open and kind of learn as the days and weeks and months go by what works and what doesn't work. And for me, I think the thread through it all is just being very realistic with myself. A lot of people talk about having a positive mental attitude or the power of positive thinking. And for me, I've just You know, I've always been way too much of a cynic to continually tell myself over and over again to think positive thoughts and it's just going to be fine, because it hasn't been for 8 years. And even after a couple months into cancer, I thought, you know, this sucks. This isn't fine and this isn't okay. And it doesn't mean that I won't be okay, and it doesn't mean that I can't find strength in this experience. But for me, I'm into the power of realistic thinking and looking at where I'm at today and what it means to be dealing with this disease instead of trying to sort of sugarcoat it with the happy talk. So for me, that's really the way that I deal with it, is just by getting very real with it and living with my eyes wide open.
Right, but the notion of living with cancer is almost now a hierarchy at this point, because you have people like Erin Zammit is a great example of someone who has chronic myelogenous leukemia, and she's on this pill called Gleevec, which basically staves off the cancer from getting any worse, but quite often it never gets any better, and you just literally live with this cancer sitting in your body the whole time, but you take a pill every day. Then you have people like Chris Carr, who never had any treatments whatsoever and are doing their best to help their body maintain some sort of some immune stasis to prevent the cancer from advancing. Then you have people like yourself who've been through all the crazy treatments and it's still just kind of sitting there.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about how cancer affects us emotionally, but you know, the whole reason why we, you know, raise the money and buy the bracelets and do the walks is to find a cure, and that's a process, and it happens over time, and for me, I'm just tethered to science in a way that is important and kind of proactive to me. I mean, we have a choice about whether or not to be active and educated about our care, and part of doing that does give me hope, because I can learn who are the prominent researchers out there now who are working to find a cure for my disease, and if not a cure, then perhaps a medication that will help me absorb my treatment better or help prevent metastases or slow the disease down. So for me, hope is not thinking everything's okay and everything's gonna be okay. For me, hope is realizing that AstraZeneca is putting some serious cash in the hands of some researchers at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and that maybe they're 3 years out from finding a drug that can help me. And the more that I know about this, and the more that I talk to my doctors about this, the more they treat me like a peer instead of a patient, the less they placate me and tell me, sorry, go home, everything's going to be okay. The more they let me into their circle of understanding and knowledge, and the more I get better care and better treatment, and that's what's going to lead to extending my life.
I think you summed it up, extending your life, and I think that's really what it comes down to. Let me ask you a question. The name of your book is called Everything Changes, and I could probably imagine why it's called that, but I'll let you share with the audience what that's about.
Well, you know, I think that most cancer patients, I can't speak for everyone, but I think most cancer patients at some time or another are forced to become intimately acquainted with their toilet or their bathroom, and that was my case for sure. And so I had a huge stack of reading material next to the toilet, right? I mean, I think it's a great way to educate yourself while you're going through cancer treatment, is just to read in small bits and pieces while you're in the bathroom. So I had this book called The Tao Te Ching, and it's a Chinese philosophy book. It was written by Lao Tzu in the 6th century BC, and it is full of quite amazing knowledge. So what I would do is, you know, I'd be sitting in the bathroom, and I would just open it up to a random page and to a random passage and kind of think about it. So one day, I just opened it up, and I opened it up to this passage that said, everything changes. And it just stuck with me. That became my mantra for getting through cancer. Because if I'm one of these kind of grounded in reality people, the power of realistic thinking, for me, saying, everything's going to get better doesn't necessarily work, but for me, saying that everything changes, that's what got me through the hard times. That's what got me through physical pain. That's what got me through the heartache of being dumped or being single when I had cancer. That's what got me through the times when there was bad news, is that I knew this moment will not last because everything changes and there will be something different that comes after this. And it's what would get me unstuck.
Well, it's funny because I remember when I when I was diagnosed in college, I actually was in the middle of writing a musical. And the name of that musical was called Times Like These, which was just some sort of sophomoric attempt to feel like I was being creative and incubated as an artistic undergrad in at college. But when I got diagnosed, I changed the name of the show to Changing Times. And again, it wasn't, as like I said, it wasn't like this dramatic, you know, I'm going to get through it or there's going to be an end. It was a realistic, all right, this is the new path now. Things are changing. And so when I first met you and heard the name of your book and your blog, that was I don't think I've ever told you this, that was the very first thing that popped into my head, was that there's a karmic bond shared between the two of us, because I feel like spiritually we were in the same mindset when this happened to us. So I think it's just a great name. It really hit me. And it's also interesting, too, because the book isn't a biography. The book is it's a compilation about, you know, of other stories and sort of a larger perspective and a vantage on the entire schema of what this all means to people. Is there a specific reason that you chose not to be nearly as narcissistic as I would be?
Well, yeah, I feel that memoirs abound in the cancer world. And so there are a lot of books out there that talk about people's individual stories. And, you know, I wanted something different. During treatment, I felt that I was really saturated with these sort of stereotypical images of the cancer survivor as a hero. And these images did not match my own experience of coping with cancer. And instead, they actually made me feel more isolated rather than inspired. Because, you know, here's a guy, you know, running a triathlon, or here's a woman with cancer who's climbing a huge mountain. And I was like, well, what about people who are just having a hard time getting out of bed during the day? Like, putting your feet on the floor and standing up is actually, I think, often the equivalent of climbing a mountain. So even though during my cancer treatment I toted around a notebook with me everywhere, 2 years in I had filled 12 journals with my own cancer experience, I didn't want to write a book about me. I wanted to write a book in which I was sort of a provocateur, and I was coaxing from other cancer patients stories that I hadn't seen written or heard about anywhere else. So that's why I decided to write this book. It is, in a sense, a memoir, and that it's the story of my travels and journeys meeting these people and interviewing them about their cancer stories. And I also wanted to include really jam-packed resource sections after each chapter that relate specifically to young adults with cancer. So there is a lot of resources that I didn't include in my book that I thought, you know, they're out there somewhere else. You know, what to do when you're first diagnosed, that's out there somewhere else. But how to have sex when you've just gone through treatment, but you're actually a virgin and had never had sex before, that wasn't out there. So it was really important to me to kind of look under the rocks in the cancer community and in the psychology community and in the research community and find the people whose work is actually in process and hadn't yet been published, and to take their tips and their insights and turn it into a really useful resource guide that is a very large part of this book, too.
You know, I want to read something for the audience out there, and this is a quote from the back of the book. And I will just read the quote as is. Quote, by page 3 of the introduction to Everything Changes, I wanted not only to devour the rest of the book, but I wanted to call Carol up, get to know her, and, if we weren't both already married, see if I could sleep with her. Then the book got really good. It is without a doubt the most forthright, emotionally sophisticated, and plain old valuable book I've seen of its kind. The book defines and exemplifies what the verb fight really means, to arm, prepare, and engage in sustained effort to gain a desired end. If that's your mission, this is your instruction manual, end quote. And that quote is by Evan Handler. I think that's a really powerful statement.
It is.
Well, Evan is great. Evan's a great guy. He's also an amazing writer, too, who has written his own cancer books. And I think part of what he's responding to is that I was really selective in who I chose to interview in this book. And I sent the call out nationally among social workers and on Craigslist and through the cancer community. And just by tacking up on bulletin boards a request for people to call me. And I got so many calls. But
what was
your
criteria?
Well, you know, my criteria was that people were speaking something that I hadn't heard before. It was really easy for me when somebody called on the phone and we started talking to realize this is a story that I think others can learn from but has not been told before. So a woman named Wafa who is in my book and talking about how she was addicted to going clubbing during cancer and during her cancer treatment because she was so afraid to sit at home alone by herself. Because that's when, like, the creepy, nasty, scary thoughts come into your head when you're sitting at home alone by yourself. I wanted to hop on a plane and went to sort of rural Alabama and interview a woman named Tracy who talked about her lowest moment during cancer was she was home by herself one day. Her son was at school. Her husband was at work. And she just thought, this is so bad. Like, my life is so painful, and I'm only causing misery to those around me. And she thought about going and getting a gun that was in her closet and ending it. And it sounds really extreme, but, you know, 25% of the young adult cancer patients suffer from depression. And thinking about ending it is probably something that crosses a lot of people's minds. And by talking about that, we give permission for people to be okay with the sort of nasty little thoughts that creep into their head. And then we also get to learn, what do you do once you feel that way? How do you turn that around and make a life for yourself after you've gone there? And so for me, I could just tell when I started talking to people on the phone that some people were giving me, you know, a story that was very much from the heart and from their experience, but it wasn't necessarily revealing something that I hadn't heard before. And so my criteria was that sort of unnameable quality of somebody is willing to expose this incredibly raw and vulnerable side. And so there's this very sort of ultra-confessional nature to the stories in the book.
Well, I think that that's a great segue into bringing on our second guest tonight. We'll get back to the book in a second, but let's queue up here.
What time is it?
9:37. My second guest tonight, Carol staying on the line, but Seth Eisen is a visual and performing artist who has been teaching and creating projects within hospitals with HIV/AIDS and cancer patients. His noted installation, Body of Free Radicals, is a reading room that simulates the room he lived in during his own treatment and recovery. Seth is a 30-something lymphoma survivor and was also a young adult caregiver to his brother who died of melanoma. He is one of the featured stories in Carol's book, Everything Changes, and my pleasure to welcome this evening to the Stupid Cancer Show, Mr. Seth Eisen. Hello, Seth.
Hello.
Hey, Seth.
Hi.
Well, we have you here on the show with Jack and Carol, and
so exciting.
It's very cool. This book is phenomenal. Your story is amazing. I'd like to give you the stage for a minute or two to just talk about, basically expound upon your bio and the tragic loss of your brother.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking. I moved to San Francisco in 94, January. My brother had just been diagnosed. We didn't think much of it, and you know, he kind of played it down, you know, because the C word, which I talk about a little bit in my interview, which was like, wow, if you have cancer, it's kind of like you don't talk about it in my family anyway. And, you know, things kind of got worse, and within 18 months he died, and I was his primary caregiver. I never thought after that, you know, 7 years later I'd be the one on the other side. And luckily, actually, I learned a lot of lessons from caregiving of him in the process of what it might be like to go through it, but actually you never really know until you've gone through it yourself. So Yeah, it was a really devastating thing, but I'm very thankful to him as well, you know, for kind of indoctrinating me into the cancer world.
And if I could ask, how old was he when he passed?
He was 33, and I was also 33. The age of Christ.
Wow. For
not
a Juno-less.
On you or anything.
Yeah, fabulous. So, I mean, and how did you come across Carol? I mean, Carol, you're on the line. Why don't you guys, how did this come about?
Well, it's interesting. This could be one of those little When Harry Met Sally moments. You know how they interview the guy and the girl who've been married for like 50 years, and you get his version of how they met and then her version of how they met. But why don't we hear your version first, Seth?
Okay. Well, here's my version. When I got diagnosed, a common friend of ours who we both went to school with, called me and said, a friend of mine has cancer, and she'd like to talk to you. And I just thought, well, that's odd. Why would she want to talk to me? Just a stranger. And even before we even spoke, Carol sent me a packet of information about insurance for people with cancer in the mail. And I just thought, wow, this is an extraordinary person. She doesn't know me, but she's already sending me information to, like, help me figure out the crazy insurance deal. So we actually met after a performance of hers. I went and saw her perform, and I was really blown away by her work. And we sat down after that and became kind of instant friends. Is that different for you?
Yeah, my version of the story is really great to hear, because I don't know if other people experience it, that there are times that happened during cancer treatment that you don't ever remember. And I actually, until you just told that story, hadn't remembered that I got that information together and sent it to you.
I still have it.
I'm so glad. Yeah, I'm big on pitching resources to people well before this book. So, yeah, I remember meeting Seth after this performance and hearing about him through mutual friends. And we just sat in this theater and talked for hours about our cancer experience, and it was really an amazing thing to be able to talk to somebody one-on-one instead of being in a support group, we just, you know, really hit it off, and we got to talk about a lot of sort of taboo things that I think I probably wouldn't have blurted out in front of a group of people, but could do with this amazing guy who was sort of face-to-face.
Right, and there's no coincidence that you mentioned the virgin who was diagnosed, right?
Right.
I'm just messing with you. So what was it specifically about Seth's story that tied into this rebellious, precocious, you know, intimate, you know, theme for your book?
Well, there were a couple of things. One was that I noticed that Seth was a person who really stepped up to the plate and just kicked ass at organizing his friends and building support networks. And I think that's an incredible lesson for other young adults to learn from. I mean, I had to learn that too. I was living far away from my family when I was diagnosed, and I just looked to Seth as this beacon of how to do it. So, Seth, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how you organized your friends and what that was like. You know, some of the highs and lows of asking for help from friends and building your support network.
Sure. That was really tricky for me. But the first thing that happened was, as soon as I was diagnosed, a friend of mine called me up and he said, I'd like to instigate a circle for you of your male friends. And about five or six of my friends came over one afternoon, and we just thought to sort of strategize what I was going to do, how I was going to hold this. And one of my oldest friends, whose name is Remy Charlotte, he's a children's book author and choreographer, he was present, and he said, and I, of course, being the oldest person, I kind of really remembered what he said. It stuck with me. He said, one of the most difficult things you're going to have to remember is how to receive. And for me, like, giving has always been really easy, you know, working in HIV or taking care of my brother, or taking care of family or friends, it's really easy. But being on the other end and actually receiving or telling people what you need was going to be a big challenge, and it was a big challenge, and I had to be kind of coerced into it. But then I realized that people were starting to give me a lot of things I didn't really want, and that it was going to be up to me to kind of say what I needed. So that kind of led me into, you know, sending out kind of a big, huge email to people saying what had happened and how they could support me. I can give you more detail if you want.
Yeah, why don't you just, I mean, I think a lot of people don't know what to ask for or feel slightly embarrassed. I mean, I know that I was like, am I really supposed to ask someone to do my laundry? But yes, I was supposed to. And that's what I had to do. So maybe you can explain just what some of the things are that you had people do and how that was organized.
Yeah, sure. Well, what I did was I sort of came up with a list of all the things that I would need or I thought I might need. And yes, laundry was actually one of them. And I kind of put that at the bottom thinking, oh, God, I'm never going to let anyone do my laundry. That is just so gross and so wrong. How could you ask anyone to do your laundry? But there got up to be a point where I really could not get out of bed. There was just no way I was going to do any laundry. And so that really came in handy. But things like taking me to doctor's appointments, taking me to therapy, taking me to my infusion every day. Let's see, what else? Cleaning my house, going shopping for me, taking me out so I could get out of the house, keeping me company. It was just endless. There were so many different things I needed. I went to a lot of different specialists, and I did a lot of sort of alternative care. I needed people to really sort of help me navigate that. One thing that really came in handy was my friend who I call my Aunt Nancy. She's just an older friend of mine who I've deemed my aunt, and she did all the scheduling for me of people. So I just basically said what my needs are and what days I needed what. And she put out an email and said, everyone call me. And she just, every week she'd send me a schedule of who was coming over on what day to bring me my meals, to clean my house for me, to keep me company and so forth. So that was really amazing. And it was really just because I was able to sort of be very clear about what I needed and just ask for it. People love to know exactly what you need. Because the worst thing is, as we've talked about, is having people just give you a lot of recipes or bring you over a lot of stuff that you really don't want, which, you know, they might want when they're sick, but, you know, or they just don't know what to do. A lot of people feel really bad. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to do. But if you can kind of give them a few cues, I think that part is, that's really helpful to people because then they can actually feel really linked into your healing process.
Hey, Seth, let me ask you one of my James Lipton questions.
Okay.
What does the cure for cancer mean to you?
The cure for cancer. first thing that comes to mind is self-discovery. Perhaps, I don't know, I have a lot of answers for that.
Well, there's no right answer, just in case you're wondering if I'm going to, like, you know,
No. I didn't think there was, but I think something, it has something to do with really getting to know yourself in a deeper way than we're sort of trained or asked to in our culture. Because mostly, you know, we don't see that many sick people on the street, so when you see a sick person, you don't know that, wow, they're going way slower than everyone else. You have to really know yourself pretty well to know what your needs are, to know whether you can kind of get out of bed and what you can cope with. So cure for cancer, knowing yourself, knowing what your needs are. I don't know. There's no cure for cancer.
Oh, my God. You still get the applause button for that one. Hang on.
Maybe we should do a walk, a bike ride, a marathon, you know, for the cure.
It's like you won the prize on the, you know, on the George, the Groucho Marx show or something. Or like on the Pee Wee Herman show, you know, on
the magic word from John.
Right.
You know, when you say,
dream
yeah, John, you said, yep, you did. You won the prize. You're the 11 millionth survivor on the show.
So, Seth, you know, I want to ask you a question that is kind of a great segue from the prize-winning response of, you know, hey, there's no cure for cancer. And I love your straight-upness about that. And there's a quote in the book that I'm wondering if you can read. It comes from you, and I feel like it really is my favorite quote in the whole book because it sums up this experience of just accepting what is real. you know, hey, like, there might not be a cure for your cancer, you know,
right.
And just being real about that. And you always just stun me with how you do that. And so I'm wondering if you can read your passage from the book about the time that you were in the hospital and kind of in your worst moment and what that taught you.
Yeah, I'd love to. Okay, you ready? At
yes.
the end of treatment, I got super sick with really high fevers from a rare infection and was in the hospital. They didn't know what was wrong with me, and I felt like I had already died. I remember seeing our friend Lauren Olds on the floor of my hospital room writing checks for paying my bills, and I thought, it's over. This has got to be it. I cannot stay here anymore. I'm ready to die. I had a constant flow of tears. This is where I connected into what God and spirituality is. It's the brokenheartedness of feeling complete desperation. My heart was cracked open, and there was this incredible tenderness inside. Everybody has this tenderness. We just don't know how to get there. This fragile state is the closest to being at one with God or the universe. That vulnerable and raw reference point is the greatest teacher. That's where Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, and the really compassionate people of the world are coming from. They have a constant access to this deep understanding of what it is to be human and what it is to experience pain. To me, this is the most real place, but it's raw and uncomfortable. So why would you want to go there? We do everything we can in our power to run from that painful, ugly place. It's not necessarily what we would think of as positive, but it's real. We rush around our lives wanting happiness, but it evades us because we are not willing to touch what is real. We think, oh, it's money or success or things being a certain way that will bring us happiness or satisfaction. But I think it actually comes from that brokenheartedness, which is our true humanity. It's the place where we are all our weakest and our strongest. From that place, you can relate to anyone.
You get another round of applause for that one, man. That was poetic justice.
You just brought the entire chat room to a stop with those words. That was really powerful.
Wow. Well done. Well done, Seth. Really, really inspiring.
Thank you. Well, that was partly, of course, from Carol's questions. When I read it again, actually, when the book came out, I was kind of shocked. I mean, of course I believe all of that, but it's really about her questioning, the process of asking the questions that really, like, sort of got into the most juicy part of what I experienced. And that is a really true story in how I experienced it, that feeling of brokenheartedness. It was a lot of what I felt after my brother died. You know, it's like I couldn't hide how broken my heart was. I felt incredibly raw, and, like, there was sort of, like, a hole in my chest. And it definitely helps a lot to sort of talk to people who could, like Carol, relate to that experience of feeling brokenhearted and kind of cracked open.
I remember when I was interviewing you, and I did, Seth lives in San Francisco, but I did my interview with him in Philadelphia because he was back there visiting his family, and it was a total trip. I went to his parents' house for dinner, and we went out cha-cha dancing with them, and it was a crazy time. But when we were doing our interview, I think we were sitting at a table in this cafe, and, you know, he's telling me this unbelievable, I mean, you just heard it. It's just pretty amazing experience about vulnerability and how your strength comes from these incredible vulnerable moments. And then right after that, you were like, okay, and then I got better, and then I'm back in the world, and then what the hell do you do? You know? And I'm wondering if you can talk about that a little bit, because I experienced this too, and I've talked to many other people who have, that we have these really profound moments of experiencing our vulnerability during our cancer treatment or any part of the cancer experience. And then we're just kind of catapulted back into daily life, and we're supposed to sort of, like, pick up where we were before. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you.
Yeah,
and not to interrupt, but we have about a minute left for the segment. So if you could talk about that in 60 seconds, you'll be the winner of the week.
Okay. I'll just quote a friend of mine. It was heinous, girl. It was heinous. It sucked. It was really awful going back into the world because people don't get that fragility, and people aren't really used to being in touch with their fragility. And I had to really redefine myself and understand what it was like to get back into the world, even though you're depressed, even though you've been sort of kind of taken apart piece by piece and having to sort of sew yourself back together to make a complete human again and have that deeper understanding of what it is to be sort of disembodied and re-embodied and then actually come back into the world with that knowledge and start to rebuild yourself. Very difficult, but definitely doable. How's that?
I think that that was exactly 60 seconds. You're the winner again, but I think I've overused the clapping sound clip for tonight. All right, there you go. All right, Jack can fill in for us. I look forward to meeting you one day, Seth. You're really inspiring, a great guy. Sincerely apologize, whatever that's worth, you know, for the loss of your brother. It's not right. It's not okay. But congratulations to you on your survival of stupid cancer.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Great
likewise
job, Seth.
You.
Thank you.
We'll have you back next time. Thanks so much. Seth Eisen, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Carol, your book, Everything Changes, people can go to everythingchangesbook.com and read the first chapter for free on your site. Isn't that true?
That is certainly true.
And I guess just wrapping up here, I can't help but not talk about these strange synchronicities between your book and I2Y and my contributing to your book and cross-promoting the whole message. Is there anything more karmic, perhaps, about the collusion of our two agendas to make this book really the embodiment of young adult survivorship?
It was so great to meet you and realize that you existed and that we kind of got it together. And what we're both about is looking at how can we help this specific segment of the cancer population, and not by, you know, reinventing the wheel over and over again or just raising a bunch of money, but understanding like what awareness can do, the kind of pressure that you can put on decision makers, the kind of power that you can have when you are vocal with your friends, when you speak up to your doctors, and when you band together with other survivors, and that's what it's all about. And yeah, we're really on the same page with that, and it's exciting.
I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with this book. Jack, any thoughts, final words here?
Great, great show again.
Oh, now you're at a loss for words.
Not just because of the new segment. I meant the show as a whole. It was a very good show and great guest.
I think it was a great show, too. Carol, keep us posted. You'll be here every Monday night for our listeners to hear what's going on with the book. And we'll be plugging away with it. It's just everythingchangesbook.com. I love your new website. You guys got to just go check it out. Congratulations on 5 years of hard work and stupid cancer.
Thank you. And, you know, I interviewed far more people than I could cram into one book, so there are going to be lots of interviews posted on my blog there as well. So
right, and there's no reason why we couldn't have other people in the book to show up on the show spontaneously.
Absolutely.
And I just quickly want to welcome all of our first-time listeners. We had a lot of new people in the chat room tonight, and it was good conversation. Everyone enjoyed the show, so welcome to all the first-time listeners.
Yep, and a final word before we close out the show. Thanks to you, Jack and Carol. The I'm Too Young for This website had a small facelift this weekend, so if you want to check it out, go to stupidcancer.com and let us know what you think.
It's gorgeous.
We got the Good Housekeeping seal of cancer approval from Carol.
Indeed,
and
you do.
And the show has a fan page on Facebook. So
and we just launched a fan page for the Stupid Cancer Show on Facebook. You can check it out on our website. And I guess that's tonight's show. Thank you guys for being with me once again, and we'll see you back here next Monday.
Sounds good.
And
great to be here.
Now it's time for our closing sequence.
Good night.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did. Poking a stick at stupid cancer.
Love.
I'd like to thank my guests, Carol Rosenthal, Brian LaBelle, Seth Eisen, as always, Jack Bouffard, and Carol Rosenthal, my co-host.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
My pleasure.
We're
Alrighty, next week, Alternative Lifestyles and Rare Diseases with Daryl Middledorf.
Love.
founder of the LGBT Survivor Program, and Dennis Costello from the Auroras Foundation in Europe. It's going to be a hell of a program. Same bad time, same bad channel. Folks, remember, if you missed any of our previous shows, you can listen to the archives at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast by visiting iTunes or going to itunes.ity.com or just search for Stupid Cancer within the iTunes store. Remember, not stupid, not cancer. We'll see you all back here next week live from the chemo deck. Jack, Carol, Captain Stubing, Julie, and whatever the daughter's name was. And I wish you all a phenomenal evening. Go to bed, Leah. Bocker out. Won't hurt anymore.